Blog Talk Radio.
Who am I? We are sorry for the inconvenience from last show. We're going to go ahead and bring in the student teacher that will be teaching the shadow hour. Huamana.
Huamana.
How are you doing, the shadow hour, brother?
I'm doing my best. How about yourself?
Thank you for asking. I'm doing my best as well.
All right, student teacher, student teacher of the House of Hu, Humanity United. I would like to give my full reverence to Hua, Yanun Zodat, the Master Teacher, Nibu, and all of our Natiru across the universe. Hua.
Hua Mana, are we going to be waiting on the other student teacher?
She's feeling a little under the weather, this shadow, so I'm probably doing it by myself.
Okay. Well, we give our blessings to her. At this time, for those who are just coming back in, we thank you and we apologize for the 5-minute wait. And you can go ahead, brother, and teach. I will let you know if there's any hands up. Oh, if you would like to put your hand up for those who are coming in, please press 1 on your phone.
Welcome, listeners, family. I would like to start off the show with an inspirational saying from our master teacher, coming out of the scroll of inspirational sayings. This is number 38. Do not believe in miracles. Rely on them. We are going to be continuing the show that we started last week, Shadow. It was talking about the not-so-miracles of Jesus. If you go to John chapter 14, verse 12, verily I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I shall do, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. So we already know that this is a fictitious character that they made, this Jesus of the Bible. But they based this Jesus of the Bible off of beings that were here, our ancestors, our real beings, beings that they can find and dig up today. But the teachings that this character, Jesus, did in this Bible, there were a lot of miracles that this Jesus did. And this scripture right here says that the works that I do, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, meaning that we would do greater miracles than this Jesus of the Bible did. And just to show you that, we were pointing out a lot of different ways that the miracles that this Jesus did in the Bible were things that we as men and women, we do today. A lot of the so-called miracles that they said that they saw and all these other things that was recorded in this book, there's many, many instances that we do the same thing today. For instance, we were talking about how in John chapter 2, verse 1 through 11, he turned water into wine. And we talked about a machine that you can buy today that, you know, for around $400 or so that can turn water into wine on your own. We also talked about when we went to John chapter 4, verse 46, when Jesus cured the nobleman's son of a fever. We explained what a fever really was and how that's the body's natural reaction to fighting off bacteria and things of that nature. And we also told you how, you know, natural ways to cure fever so you can cure yourself. It wasn't just this biblical Jesus that cured people of fevers and things of that nature. We gave you a lot of different herbal remedies and also gave you some of those ones that you don't want to buy, you know, those over-the-counter drugs that you want to try to stay away from, and told you the differences between those and the dangers and the benefits and everything like that. Something else that we talked about last week, we were talking about when he healed leprosy, when you go to Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45. And then we talked about a few different people that help cure themselves of leprosy and, you know, the herbal remedies that they have to cure leprosy in today's day and time. Something else that we were talking about was Luke chapter 7, verses 11 through 18, This is where he raised the widow's son from death. And there was a story that we had brought up when there was a teen cyclist that was actually brought back to life. I know in my, I saw a few people in the hospitals that's been brought back to life, you know, called resuscitation. So these types of things that we see this biblical Jesus doing, man and woman have proved that these things can be done today. And so we're going to continue with a few more, you know, continue this conversation and just show you the ways that man can do the same things that this biblical Jesus has done already. If we go to Matthew chapter 9, verse 27 through 31. It says, "And when Jesus departed thence, two blind men followed him, crying and saying, Thou, Son of David, have mercy on us. And when he was come into the house of the blind man, the blind man came to him, and Jesus saith to them, Believe ye that I am able to do this? They say unto him, Yea, Lord. Then touched their eyes, saying, According to your faith, be it unto you. And their eyes were open, and Jesus straightly charged them, saying, See that no man know it. But they, when wherewith departed, spread abroad his fame in all that country." So in these few verses right here, we have Jesus that cured two blind men. And what I want to show everybody today is that they can also do the same thing as man and woman in the labs and things of that nature. There was one situation where there was a optician who cured his own blindness. This right here is coming from naturalnews.com. It's an article here that's talking about an optician that cured his own blindness with herbal medicine made from marigolds. A retired optician says he has cured his own case of age-related blindness by self-medicating with a supplement containing a marigold derivative. "I decided to do this off my own back," says 73-year-old Harry Marsman. "I treated myself, which is the very thing you're not supposed to do in any profession." "As a retired professional, I have felt a responsibility to get this message across to as many people as possible. Age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, is the most common cause of blindness in people over the age of 60 and causes loss of vision in the center of the eye. Wet AMD occurs when abnormal blood vessel growth leads to the destruction of the eye's light-sensitive cells. Dry AMD occurs when the photoceptors atrophy without blood vessel damage." Now, Marcin, he lost his vision in his right eye due to wet AMD in 2001, and soon after began to suffer from dry AMD in his left. Eventually, he lost so much vision that he could no longer move around on his own, and began to consider Lunan and Braille. The retired doctor tried experimental laser, vitamin, and supplemental treatments, but nothing made any difference. Then in 2007, he was given a filter about a flyer about a new AMD supplement containing marigold extract, an ingredient he had yet to try. So Marcin spent $240 on a year's worth of the treatment. He said, and I quote, "I now know professionally that I have recovered almost completely from the effects of the dry AMD in my left eye," Marilyn said. "I am the first person to have such good fortune. I have recovered 95% of the sight of my left eye, which is miraculous, considering that at one point I was literally blind in the dark." You see that he said that it was miraculous, right? Continue on reading. "The supplement contained in the marigold extract, Mezzo, as well as the spinach derivative lutein and the corn derivative." Now, Marcin had previously tried both lutein and Zelaxin, which were both recommended by the U.S. National Institutes of Health, but they never had any effect. So by him using this marigold, which is comes from a plant entitled marigold, if you start to look it up, which is basically the foundation of all the pills that these over-the-counter pharmacists and, you know, these hospitals and where they're practitioners. Most of the medicines that they use over the counter start off with a plant. Starts off with a natural remedy that they get from plants and things of that nature. And then they add a whole bunch of other things into it to make you addicted or make you to come back or to give you other side effects. Like when you see that whole list of 27 side effects when you're trying to cure this one thing, those usually come from all the things that they add on, the chemicals and all the other things that they add in. But really, if you just go back to the plant, the root of the plant, you can get the same type of, you know, medicine that you need without all the side effects. Also wanted to read something that was pretty interesting. It was talking about how always using glasses and contact lenses and stuff like that, they really are damaging your eyes more than we know. This was another interesting article that I just wanted to add on to this right here. This one right here is coming from ClarkKnightWordPress.com. The article is entitled, A Simple Natural Cure for Blindness, Leading in the Retina. It says, don't wear glasses or contacts. Avoid elective cornea surgery. A young lady called me on the phone over a year ago. She had been contacting natural vision teachers for help with an eye condition called CSR, which is central serous retinopathy. The condition occurred on and off for some time. Then it progressed. She had lost almost 90% sight in one eye, and the other eye was about 50% sight, with the rest of sight in the eyes 50% blurred. Areas of her field were patchy, some with vision, others with no vision. She had worn reading glasses, plus lenses or magnifiers, for about 20 years. Stronger and stronger lenses as time passed. She has a nervous temperament due to unfortunate experiences in life, many duties, and this may have caused the initial slight blur years ago that led to her first pair of glasses. The doctor had recently given her another stronger prescription and told her to keep wearing the glasses. He told her to wait for a certain level of further impairment of the CSR condition. Then he would do an operation to seal the leaking blood vessels in the retina. The lady had also developed the habit of reading with a magnifying glass. None of the natural vision teachers she contacted, some of them who was famous, would help her unless she paid money. One teacher wanted $80 an hour. Another charges about $150 an hour. The patient is a working mother. She lost her job due to the condition and cannot afford to pay for natural vision lessons. As true Bates Method practitioners know, eyeglasses, especially as they become stronger, cause injury to the eye's health, often the retina, lens, cornea, and circulation, and also the optic nerve. The natural vision teachers and the eye doctor never told her the simple things to help reverse the eye condition, to stop wearing glasses, to learn to relax and shift, use central fixation and avoid effort to see, avoid squinting and staring. I taught her these basic practices in only about 30 minutes. She took the advice and stopped wearing the glasses. She does not like to practice any of the Bates method, but I was able to get her to palm and shift and understand central fixation. We also discovered that a homeopathy doctor was giving her some very toxic herbs, a variety, many all mixed together. One causes high blood pressure in the eyes and impairs circulation, many other side effects. This lady is in her early 30s, and I was myself when young. She believed in every natural doctor, listened to their every word, wide-eyed and trusting. It took a while to completely convince her to stop all the herbal stuff, but she eventually quit the main ones that were causing health problems. Then I did not hear from her for about 3 months. She called one day and told me she had stayed away from the glasses completely and her vision had returned almost 100%. She had a lot of blur but could get around. The main thing was fixed, step number one. The blindness was gone, and her eye doctor said the CSR had healed her, so the operation was dropped. He warned that CSR can heal on its own and return. As more time passed, the blur cleared to about 2040 to about 2050. Then she still had some trouble reading up close. I did not hear from her before about 5 months. Then I had a feeling to call her. I did, and she said the CSR had returned, but not much. I asked if she had gone back to glasses. She said no, but stated she had been using a strong magnifying glass to often read with. I described to her how a magnifying glass is like eyeglasses and can cause the same eye vision problems that the glasses cause. She stopped using the magnifying glass, contacted me a couple months ago. CSR healed again. Only problem is she hates having blurry close vision. It's hard to get her to practice the Bates method. She is very busy. If she would practice it more, I'm sure the close vision would reach com- complete clarity, and there would be no temptation to use the magnifier. I have had some students tell me that they were not wearing eyeglasses, but then I find out later that they are sneaking use of glasses. This prevents improvement. Weaker, reduced 20/40 temporary glasses prescriptions can be used when there is no advanced blur, no eye health problems. But 20/20 and stronger glasses will prevent improvement and lead to increased eye health impairment or vision impairment. In this lady's case, absolutely no glasses had to be the rule. It saved her eyesight. She is a sweet person. Her family loves her and needs her, and she deserves to be happy. I have her email stating this experience, but she strongly dislikes speaking on the condition. I've met a lot of people like this. Having to talk or write about their condition brings back the unhappy memories and often the intense fear, anxiety, and depression. I'm asking students, now many of them teachers, to tell their story. The new student story is amazing. From throwing away his glasses and getting more and more perfect clear flashes in less than a month, he learns fast, practicing the training, and I know he will be a great teacher. A Jewish man was 80% blind in one eye, 100% in the other. He cured himself with the Bates method, cured his lady friend who had a similar condition. Main treatment, sunlight, and no glasses. So basically the reason for the reading this was talking about sometimes the lenses and stuff can do a lot of harm to the eyelids. You know, how the math teacher always talked about using focus and concentrating energy on one point. So when you take a magnifying glass and you take it outside, I'm pretty sure a lot of us did it as kids or children. You took a magnifying glass and put it over the sun or put, you know, an object under the magnifying glass through the sun. Now that, you know, the power of the sun, it reaches us every single day. You know, we feel the energy from the sun all the time, but it doesn't burn a hole through our skin, though. But if you take all that energy coming from the sun and put it through a magnifying glass and focus all that energy on one little point, you can start a fire. You can burn up grass, leaves, paper, whatever the case may be. So basically using eyeglasses, you know, continuously can actually damage the eyes and things of that nature. Is it something that, you know, you can go ahead and do a little bit more research on, look into it just a little bit more? But yeah, I just thought that was very interesting there. But as we see here, we have a couple people here that cured themselves of blindness, something that this biblical Jesus did in Matthew chapter 9, verse 27. So this is something else that man and woman can do today. I want to continue on. I want to go to Matthew chapter 12, verses 10 to 13. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day, that they may accuse him? And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep? And if it fall apart into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it up? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath day. Then saith he to the man, stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. So what we have here in Matthew chapter 12:10, we got a man that came with him with a withered hand. And this biblical Jesus had healed him of it. We all know that science today and man and woman today have found out how to do these same type of things. But here I have a report where a man's finger grows back, and it's all thanks to pig bladder powder. This happened in September of 2013. This article here that I'm reading from, it's talking about, amazingly, a man's severed finger grew back thanks to one South Florida doctor and a little pig bladder. Jockey Paul Halpern was feeding a horse when an animal managed to bite off one of his fingers. One of the guys that worked with me reached his hand in the horse's mouth, took the fingertip out, and I jumped in the car, grabbed the rest of my finger, wondering, what should we do? That's what he told the CBS reporter in Miami. He took the severed fingertip to the hospital, but the staff told him it was too late to reattach it. Halpern sought out Dr. Eugenio Rodriguez of the Deerfield Beach Outpatient Surgical Center, who had he had heard used a revolutionary procedure called xenograft implantation. Rodriguez used pig bladder tissue to create a mold of Halpern's middle finger and attached it to the stump. He then instructed Halpern to apply a powder made from the same pig bladder tissue for 2 months. Pig bladder is used because its protein scaffold is nearly identical to that of human tissue, according to Medical Daily. It stimulates your body to attract your stem cells, and then the stem cells start producing the tissue that is missing. Weeks later, the finger cell, bone, soft tissue, and nail grew into the mold. Long story short, it grew back, Halpern told NBC News. I'm quite happy. So here we have a person that had his finger bit off, and, you know, with help of some pig bladder and powder and our natural stem cells, he was able to regrow his own finger. I'm pretty sure a lot of people heard on that video. I can't remember which video that the master teacher got on YouTube, but it was a video that he was talking about where they grew a nose on someone's forehead because their nose had got bit off or something like that. But we have it again in the news. This happened back in September of 2015. Doctors, they grew a nose on a man's forehead. This is coming from abcnews.com. After a Chinese man's nose was irreparably damaged from infection, his doctors decided to grow a second nose on the man's forehead. So you can go ahead and look this up. This is all over the internet. It's a Chinese man that had his nose messed up, and they actually grew the nose on top of the forehead. I'm looking at the pictures right now. So these kind of things can be done, you know, if you come to a person in that long white coat and you say you got a withered hand or whatever the case may be, they can go ahead and restore those things for you. We do have the ability to heal ourselves. So this is one more thing that this biblical Jesus did in the Bible that man and woman can do today. Are you going to continue on? Going to go down to where this biblical Jesus has started transfiguring himself. There's a few things that we do these days that, you know, that this biblical Jesus did that a lot of people don't really talk about, but you don't hear your pastors talking about this and you don't hear this scripture coming out a lot. It's John chapter 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And on this wise, shewed himself. Now, we take this word shewed. This comes from the Greek, number 5319. The word is phanerio, to render, apparent, or to appear, to manifest. Also, if we go to Matthew chapter 17, verse 1. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother. I'm going to say that again. After 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up to a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them. And his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was as white as the light. So right here, he took and transfigured himself in front of three people. And this Matthew chapter 17, verse 1. And when you try to look up this word transfigured, you take it back to the Greek, it's number 3339. And it is metamorpho, or to transform, or to change. So what we're talking about is actually changing themselves, transfiguring themselves. If a lot of people may not know this, but in the Catholic Bible, they have 72 books. But in the Christian Bible, they only have 66 books. Now, one of those books that was removed was the book of Barnabas. And in the book of Barnabas, it explains how it wasn't this biblical Jesus that was actually crucified on the cross, but it was actually, he transfigured himself. He changed his face so that he could look like Judas. And it was actually Judas that was the one that was taken. He transfigured Judas' face to make him look like the Bible Jesus, should I say. And, you know, this book was actually taken out of the Bible for some apparent reason, the Council of Nicaea and people like that. But these types of scriptures don't really be talked about a lot. You know, a lot of Christians don't really know about this type of stuff here. There, give me 1 second. I want to pull up an email here talking about other verses where, or other places where it's talking about transfiguring. Bear with me 1 second here.
Romana, brother, sorry to interrupt, but we do have a hand up. The caller is 9305. Again, caller 9305.
Hua and Lukianova.
Hua, Mana, sister, how you doing?
Just great. Hua to the whole family. Good. Isn't that like, and you know, you can go get plastic surgery and stuff like that. Were you saying that this person back then did it in front of everyone in a moment's notice or something? Like, or are they skipping over some things where, you know, maybe he grew hair and then changed his nose a little bit, or shaped his eyebrows and grew hair on his head, grew hair on his face? What? I know maybe you were getting ready to explain maybe how he did that or how people do that, but when they put it in a book like the Bible, which doesn't explain things, it just says things and make you wonder, leave an image in your mind, you know, without being totally explainable about things.
Right.
Are you saying that maybe he had plastic surgery done or something like that?
Well, I get exactly what you're saying. Like, there is a lot of, you know, the Bible speaks in parables and things like that. Like, they may be saying something, but, you know, the real actuality of it is, you know, instead of they made a man in this image instantly and stuff like that, that it took, you know, evolution and it took nature for this things to happen. And, you know, it didn't really happen in the same time frame that this Bible is talking about. I understand exactly what you mean by that, but what I was just trying to make the point of, you know, this, it says here in Matthew chapter 17 too that he did it, he transfigured right before them. So, I mean, I'm not even going that deep into it. I'm just, you know, taking the verse that they're talking about it, and I'm just showing that this Jesus Bible character transfigured himself before people. We can do this today where you can see somebody one day and they can, you know, go and get a face transplant, which I'm going to read in a few articles later, and they can come back and you won't even recognize the person anymore. So we all know that this is stolen information that they put in the Bible. And when they talk about he transfigured himself, it could have possibly been just a period of time, you know, that he got older and he just didn't look the same anymore. And that's what they really meant when they, you know, put the verse in there. But I wasn't even going that deep into it. I was just talking about the English version of, you know, Matthew 17:1 and also John 21, where they talk about him transfiguring himself in front of a few people.
Oh, okay, because as I was growing up as well, you know, whenever I did pick the Bible up and read some of it or go to church, I would always try to look for the scientific part of things that,
right,
you know, try to tie that into it for some reason. And evidently it is a scientific answer to some things. But, yeah, Tao had you.
Tao has to say, and you're absolutely right with that. It's a lot of things that this Bible talks about that when you break it down scientifically, you know, it really was just things happening over a period of time. And so it doesn't explain itself, like you said. So you're absolutely right with that. And Tao had for that point there, sis.
Oh, Hua, and I want to add, for those, I don't even want to know, I don't know how to describe technically a person that writes stuff like that. They're playing on a person's lazy mentality to control them, to fool them, right? So,
right, because they know that we're not going to take the time to look it up ourselves. They're just going to tell us what it means and tell us the short version of it, you know.
Yeah, like what I mean, let's say, for instance, they'll be like, it took 7 days to make the world or whatever, or the universe, whatever, and then on the seventh day, there was rest. I mean,
right.
To be really lazy and want to say, yeah, okay, it took 7 days, let's believe in that kind of magic, and then you accord your whole life with little stupid stuff like that, but if you really sit down and try to use your brain and take the time to put all this unnecessary stuff aside and really get into, now why would they say it like that, or common sense ought to let you know, if it takes 24 hours for like a day to go by, how in the heck could it take 7 days to do all this, you know? So
mm-hmm.
And
you
then
can
the
also
more
think
you
of
practice
it.
Being lazy with your brain, the more you practice being lazy with your brain and your mentality, the weaker you become.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, the less
so
you use your mind.
Doesn't that take away from being an intelligent being and put you in the animalistic frame of mind?
Absolutely, sister. I mean, with what you were just saying, you know, it said that this Baba God took 7 days, well, 6 days to create the earth and had to rest on the seventh, like he, you know, got tired and was all out of breath. But yet, this was just one planet. We got one planet. Now, in our own Milky Way system alone, we got billions of planets. And we got billions of galaxies within, you know, within this own universe. So if it took him 7 days to create this one planet and he had to rest, what about the rest of the universe? How long did that take to create? And how many days did he have to take off, you know, for that kind of stuff? Like, you know, we don't use our own mind. We don't, you know, use common sense. We just use the word of the pastor that tells us this stuff. And then, you know, he just tells us how to think about it. And then we close the book and that's it. We walk out. Like you said, we don't take that extra step to look the words up. We don't take the extra step to try to make sense of it. Like, you know, we just listen to it and whatever they formulate in our head, that's what we run with. And, you know, we are lazy. We don't want to take those extra steps. So you're absolutely right.
Isn't the wonder of the universe, is it intelligent? Because let's say somewhere in time a being explained exactly how it all came about, and then by now someone's trying to tell you the lazy part of it. When that being comes back into this time frame, or the tribe of that comes back into this time frame, or the galactic or anything like that, just think of how furious they will be and try, you know, and just, I mean, I'm not trying to speak for that, but if it was me and I did all that hard work, and then come back and hear someone tell an outrageous lie about it, I think I would be angry and I'd have to hold myself back.
I mean, imagine how our ancestors feel, you know, like Yanum Zodak, when, you know, he come down and trying to give us all this information, telling us about 76 trillion years of knowledge that we already got within us, trying to help us remember. But we want to ask about this Jesus. We want to ask about little tiny stuff. You know, our ancestors left all that evidence, all the stuff that's on the walls, all in stone, all carved and everything, left it for us here. But yet we forgot, and we want to talk about stuff that we found in this little tiny book. You know, and we want to, you know, it's, imagine how they feel. You know, it's up to us. It's up to us to grow. It's up to us to really learn these types of things. It's up to us to do the proper research so that we can find out the truth and not just believe these little fairy tales. You know, it's like, they tell us all these fairy tales when we're children, like Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the, you know, the Tooth Fairy, but yet we hold on to the Jesus fairy tale. We don't stop believing the Jesus fairy tale.
Yeah, so Hua, just like, you know, I really don't read newspaper or anything, so I'm walking around at work day and I see on the front page how Mars appears to have flowing salt water.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm like, when I'm little, I'm like, come on. If we're here doing this, there's got to be something just about just as great doing somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it's art.
So it's like absolutely make me feel like these are like some fool idiots. You know, they could have figured that out a long time ago. Or, I mean, it was already, you know, I don't know.
It's our ego. I mean, it's sad to say, but a lot of Christians, a lot of us feel like, okay, life only exists on earth, nothing else. The rest of this boundless universe that's constantly expanding, this whole boundless universe, only life exists in just one planet out of those trillions and billions of other planets and galaxies and all that stuff. I mean, how egotistical is that to think that it's only us? Like, you know, that's sad when we think about it. You know, in our mind, we got to think bigger than that. You know, it's not just about us. You know, so all the stuff that they made our ego grow so much, you know, we got to shed all that kind of stuff.
I appreciate everything. And I just want to say to all the new souls, you are just as great and greater than what you attend to be, and you will bring your greatness out with HTM. Hua, cow hat.
Hua, not the koozie. Thank you for calling in, sister.
Well, mind at this time, we do not have any more hands up. If you would like to press, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone. Again, if you have a question, comment, or a quick statement, please press 1 on your phone. Hula.
All right, want to talk about, we were talking about when this biblical Jesus was transfiguring himself, and I was telling everybody about the book of Barnabas. You have to go into chapter 214 of the book of Barnabas. You can, you know, look this up. You can Google the book of Barnabas, and they got a PDF download. You can read the entire thing. But in chapter 214, that was the section where it was talking about that, you know, this biblical Jesus that transfigured himself or transformed himself. Also, he was talking about in John chapter 21, verses 1 through 7. Says, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed himself. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, we go also with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship immediately. And that night they caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples knew that it was not Jesus. So this is another time that he had transfigured himself, because his disciples, his homeboys, you know, the people that are supposed to follow him all the time, they knew that it was not him. Then Jesus saith unto them, children, have ye any meat? They answered him, no. And he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. All right. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, it is the Lord. So that is when they recognize him, when they say, it is the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girded his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. Also in Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 and 2. And after 6 days, Jesus take Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them. His face did shine. This is also found in Mark chapter 9, verse 2, and also in Luke chapter 29, verse 9. Same story. All right. Also in the Quran, in chapter 4, verse 157, Surat 1, Nisa, the woman, it states, and for their saying, indeed, we have killed the Messiah, Jesus, the son of Mary, the messenger of Allah. And they did not kill him, nor did they crucify him, but another was made to resemble him to them. And indeed, those who differ over it are in doubt about it. They have no knowledge of it except the following of assumption, and they did not kill him for certain. So even in the Quran, in chapter 4, verse 157, it talks about this Jesus, biblical Jesus, transfiguring himself. So these these right here are a few of the examples that you can find in the Bible, but we can also find this in today. I hear an article where it talks about a person doing a face transplant. Bear with me one second. Okay, if I find
who
that,
matter, brother, can you hear us?
Who, I can hear.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I was looking for the article that I had it earlier, but it was talking about a face transplantation. Can't seem to bring it up, but if I can find it, I can talk about that later on here. I'm going to move on to the next one.
Cool.
Go to chapter 8. Cool.
I mean, you could just use Michael Jackson as one. You could use Michael Jackson.
Yeah, there you go. Plus, they had the movie, you know, if they make a movie about something, we already know that they, you know, actually do it. And they got the movie Face Off that came out, you know, years ago.
Yes. With John Travolta and the Rambo guy, whatever.
Okay, here, I found it. Here's the article right here. This happened in June 28th of 2013 in Baltimore. In the 15 years between a shotgun blast that ravaged the bottom half of Richard Norris's face and the face transplant that ended a hermit-like life for him, the man from rural Southwest Virginia faced cruelty from strangers, fought addiction, and contemplated suicide. But even if he could go back in time, he's not sure he would erase the accident that left him severely disfigured. Those 10 years of hell I lived through, it has given me such a wealth of knowledge, Norris recently told the Associated Press, one of only two news outlets granted interviews since his transplant last year. It's unreal. It has put some of my best people in my life. Now at 38, he's starting a new life, taking online classes in pursuit of a degree in information systems and contemplating the foundation to help defray future transplant patients' everyday expenses during treatment. He also has been working with the photojournalist who has just completed a book about his journey titled The Two Faces of Richard. He hopes the story sends a message of hope to people in similar situations and encourages empathy in others. I've heard all kinds of remarks, he said. A lot of them were really horrible. After the 1997 accident at his home, Norris had no teeth, no nose, and only part of his tongue. He was still able to taste but could not smell. When he went out in public, usually at night, he hid behind a hat and a mask. Norris had dozens of surgeries to repair his face, but eventually reached the limits of what conventional surgery could do for him, said Dr. Eduardo Rodriguez, who performed some of those operations and later led the surgical team that performed Norris's face transplant. Some parts of the anatomy, such as eyelids and lips, are just too complex to recreate, he noted. You can create a semblance of things, of something, but I can guarantee you it's not normal by any means. Just weeks after Norris was told by another doctor that there was little else that could be done for him, Rodriguez presented him with another option, a transplant. The doctor, who was head of plastic surgery at the University of Maryland Medical Center, R. Adams Cowley Shock Trauma Center, had been following advancements in the face transplant field for years. An Office of Naval Research grant for the purpose of helping wounded warriors made it possible for him and his team to attempt their first face transplant, an operation that previously had been performed by only two other centers in the United States. The world's first partial face transplant was performed in France in 2005 on a woman who was mauled by her dog. Of the 27 other transplants that have followed, four recipients have died, and the survivors face a lifetime of immunosuppressant drugs, which can take a toll on their health. Unlike most organ transplant recipients who need their surgeries to live, face transplant patients are risking death to eliminate a non-life-threatening condition. So, as you can see, there's been a few face transplants already, you know, to go along with the movie and along with Michael Jackson, as my brother pointed out. So these types of things can be done by man and woman today. And so now I'm going to go down to Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. It says, and I quote, "But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. Okay, I'm sorry, this is not the one, right? When Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place apart. And when the people had heard thereof, they followed him on foot out of the cities. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, This is a desert place, and the time has now passed. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals. But Jesus said unto them, They need not depart. Give ye them to eat. And they say unto him, We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he said, Bring them hither to me. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake, and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat, and were filled, and they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, beside women and children." Kind of funny how they only counted the men, right? They just said beside women and children, they only counted 5,000 men. But this biblical Jesus took those few loaves of bread and those few fishes, and he fed over 5,000 people plus the women and children. So we're talking at least about 7,000-8,000 people or something like that, just from a few fishes. Well, how does man and woman do that today? How do they feed the masses with just a few? Well, what we have today is people eating clone foods. You know, a lot of people may not even know it, but you may be eating clone meat. You may have had some clone meat earlier today. Not at the article here talking about animal cloning. All right, in this article right here, this is actually coming straight from the FDA itself, from the FDA website. Under a section called animal cloning. It says, in 2001, when it became apparent that animal cloning may become a commercial venture to help improve the quality of herds, FDA requested livestock producers and researchers to keep food from animal clones or their offspring out of the food supply. Since then, FDA has conducted an intensive evaluation that included examining the safety of food from these animals and the risk to animal health. Based on a risk assessment, a written report by FDA scientists and issued in January 2008, FDA has concluded that meat and milk from cow, pig, and goat clones and the offspring of any animal clones are as safe as food as we eat every day. So the FDA is saying that. Cool.
Sorry about the interruption, but we do have another hand up. The caller is 9952. Again, caller 9952.
Yes.
Who am I now?
Hello.
How you doing today, bro?
I'm good, my good sir. How's everything?
I'm good.
Very good, very good. I would like to present a question. Could you tell me your meaning of the blood moon that passed a couple of nights ago? It has a lot of meaning. It's more spiritual than scientists. Do you agree?
Well, I'm doing some study with that right now, brother. I can't really explain it in depth right now, but I'm doing my own research with that, you know, myself, because I just learned about the blood moon, you know, just a little while ago. So in order for me to fully explain it, I have to do a little bit more research and studying so I could really give you a full understanding of it, because I'm still learning it myself.
All right, very good answer. Well, that was my question for now. Enjoying the show, yeah?
Okay, well, thank you for listening, brother. And, you know, as soon as I give some more information about that, I'll definitely go ahead and bring some more information about that for you.
All right, then. Well, the young lady that told me to let you know that she sent me, her name is, hold on a moment.
Is it a monitor who?
No, I'm trying to get the name for you. I sent you. Mine, yes, that's it. A-M-A-N-A, yeah.
Yeah, very good sister, very good sister.
Yes, she is a very good sister. My name is Moses.
All right, brother. Well, thank you for listening. Do you have the number to the office?
I don't, not as of yet, no, sir.
Okay, you got a pen and paper?
Yes, please hold. Are you in Atlanta?
Well, our main office is based out of Atlanta, but we have different offices all over the U.S. and, you know, a lot of different family all over.
Very good, then. Let me get a pen. All right, then, I'm ready.
Okay, the number is 678-856-1319.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you could just, just call and introduce, you could just introduce yourself. You know, we're basically a family. We're not any kind of organization or anything like that. But we just like to, know who's listening, know who we are. You know, we like to introduce ourselves, let you know what we're about and everything like that. So, you can just get a number or call anytime.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for listening, brother.
All right. Then all of us.
Woman, at this time, we do not have any more hands up. If you would like to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone, a question or a short statement. Again, press 1. If you already asked a question and you don't have any more, please press 1 again to put your hand down. Hua.
Okay, so talking about the animal clone or the eating clone meat, I just read an article from the FDA website itself that was telling us that the clone meat, they did some type of extensive test and all this other kind of stuff. They said that it was as good as safe as the food that we eat every day. So they allow this cloned meat to be going into, whatever place you may be getting your food from. There's another article here that's not saying the exact same thing that the FDA is saying, though. This right here comes from naturalsociety.com. I'm just talking about they're trying to stop people from eating clone meat over in other countries. It's entitled, Are You Eating U.S. Clone Meat? That's about to be banned. The European Members of Parliament, or the EUM, have been concerned since consumers don't want it, and the suffering of the animals involved in cloning is often severe. A vast number of clones suffer from severe birth defects. The U.S. seems unfazed by the concerns that the EUM raises. What's more, in a 968-page risk assessment document released in 2008, the FDA said that there were no subtle hazards that might indicate food consumption's risk in healthy clones of cattle, goats, or swine. That's what I just read. This sounds familiar, does it not? The organization has also told us that there are no health concerns associated with the genetically modified fruits, vegetables, trees, and fish. And, well, we've all observed the fallacy in that claim. Now the cloning issue is heating up. As the German Parliament member, Martin Hausmann, points out, due to the EU's negotiations with the U.S. and Secret Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, or the TPP, he believes that the initial report submitted to the EU in 2013 was ignored, even though it showed proof of higher rates of infection, along with disease and malformations in the liver and brains of mice, sheep, and cows. These cloning diseases could be passed on to the cloned animals, and then, when made available for human consumption, cause similar birth defects, infections, and liver and brain disorder. So not only is man, creating, feeding the masses with just a few, because all you have to do is take, the DNA structure from one animal, and you can clone it, and make thousands and thousands from that one. So what we have here is something that they've been doing for years, and I think it's going on for about 10 years with the FDA. So do you know if you've been eating clone meat today when you went to that drive-thru? you know, that Whopper that you get for so cheap, it may be a reason that it's that cheap. So we may be eating clone meat today, but it's just something else that goes to show that this biblical Jesus did something that man and woman can do today. All right, I'm going to continue on to Matthew chapter 14, verses 24 and 25. It says, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. So this is right here is talking about where this biblical Jesus walked on water. Now, I was going to use a few different examples, like a few magicians and things like that. But if you do a little bit of research, you'll find out that a lot of these magicians, like a lot of people saw as Chris Angel, he was walking on water before. But if you do some research, you'll find out that he was actually walking on plexiglass. That they, you know, it was when you look at the video, it's pretty convincing, you know, because they show from angles from top and they show angles from underneath the water. They got people actually swimming in the swimming pool. But it was kind of found out that he was actually walking on plexiglass. There's another magician named Dynamo. His real name is Stephen Fryne. And he walked on water across the River Thames over in London. But that right there is under speculation also. So, you know, all those things, that, you know, it's basically a lot of trickery going on. So what if, you know, just like the sister was saying earlier when she called in, what if this wasn't really what it's really saying? What if this biblical Jesus really didn't walk on water? What if they weren't really talking about this Jesus at all? I want to read something to you here. It's talking about what the winter solstice really is and where a lot of religions get their specific dates. There's a reason why December 25th, they say that this biblical Jesus was born, and it has to do with the winter solstice. Basically, the time of the year when the sun, the S-U-N, or the S-O-N, because we all know that people always reference the sun, you know, they always try to worship the sun instead of worshiping the Father, you know, they always try to tie Jesus and God and you know, all this into one being, but yet it's all wordplay. You know, when you, the time of year when the sun, the S-U-N, or the S-O-N, is at its lowest point of the year, causing the shortest days of the year, also known as, and the sun, the S-O-N, or S-U-N, died on the cross at its lowest point in the sky. That's when you get around the winter solstice, around December 25th, you'll find out that the sun goes down at its lowest point of the year, and it stays down there for 3 days, and it doesn't rise back up until after those 3 days, December 25th, the birth of the new sun, S-O-N, or S-U-N, the Son of God that saved the world. Now, when people, you know, people need the sun. People rely on the sun. Before these Bibles and stuff were out, people needed the sun for nourishment for their livestock, for their, you know, to grow their fruits and vegetables, for to warm themselves, to warm the house up. You know, we need the sun every day for life. We need the sun. So this is what this whole sun worship thing was really about. This right here is an article talking about the winter solstice as well. Says Christmas in America is really about the winter solstice. Americans are quite out of touch with nature. The reason for seasonal changes and the importance of the solstices. What is the common denominator that has all these religions dying for their most important day on or near December 25th? It is the winter solstice. Humans have celebrated the winter solstice for millennia. It could be argued that the winter solstice is the single most influential and important event of the year. We are hardwired to appreciate the end of short days and that days lengthening to more sun and longer days. Many holidays conform to this time and celebrate on or near December 25th, the winter solstice. December 21st and the summer solstice, June 21st, are the most dramatic of the natural holidays. Many, many candles are lit on the shortest of nights in many religions, in many countries, and in many customs outside of Christianity. Also want to read here, talking about sun worship and Constantine and the involvement of the, or the, when they brought in this sun worship and paganism and mix it in with Christianity. This is coming from MaryTruth.com. It says, was there a cover-up? Even though Dan Brown has so many facts wrong, and even though his theories are speculative at best and hearsay at worst, he might just be onto something. We can clearly see that the rise of Roman power in history as fallible men declared themselves gods and sought to replace the authority of the Bible with the traditions of pagan rituals of men. The facts indicate that there has indeed been a cover-up, one that Dan Brown missed. Constantine and the bishops of Rome did conspire in one of the greatest secrets of all history. Now, who was Constantine? Constantine the Great was a Roman emperor who reigned from 306 A.D. to 337. Tradition has it that on his way to an important battle in 312 A.D., a vision of a flaming cross appeared to him with the inscription, "And this sign conquer." He therefore authorized his mostly pagan soldiers to place a cross on their shields and went on to win the battle. Believing the Christian God to be his secret to military success and the key to uniting his empire, Constantine adopted Christianity as the official religion of Rome in 324 A.D. His life continued to be marred by bloodshed and political intrigue until his death. But through his influence, the bishops of Rome gained rapid ascendancy to political and temporal power. Sun worship. The real secret of Constantine and the bishops of Rome is their cunning introduction of sun worship and paganism into Christianity. It was done so shrewdly that, incredibly, it has been veiled with the faith for centuries. Through Constantine, paganism and Christianity joined hands in the Roman Empire. History readily records that Constantine was a sun worshiper. Hua.
Sorry, brother, I didn't mean to cut you in, but I do have another hand up. The caller is 2966. Again, caller 2966.
Yes. Yes, Hua. Hua.
Who am I?
She told me to call the show. And I have a question. What was the purpose of the red moon? Why it was red like that on this time of the year?
Well, another brother just called in right before you, and I still got to do some more research about the blood moon thing. You know, I'm just hearing about it myself, so I really didn't do a lot of research into it before this, you know, these past few days. So I still got a lot to learn about that myself before I can, you know, try to explain it to anybody else. But,
right.
You know, just keep on calling in to the show. You know, I'm pretty sure either myself or one of my brothers or sisters will try to help you out with that as best we could. But, you know, myself, I still have to do a lot more learning about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. But thank you for your question, though. Thank you for listening.
Okay.
Well, Mana, at this time, we do not have any more hands up. If you would like to put your hand up, please press 1 on your phone. And if you already had asked a question or had your hand up, please press 1 again and put it back down.
Well, history readily records that Constantine was a sun worshiper. In one decree, he declared, "On the venerable day of the sun, let the magistrates and people residing in cities rest, and let all workshops be closed." He made this decree in honor of the sun after his supposed conversion to Christianity. Constantine, even after his conversion, remained a pagan. Constantine sought to unite his kingdom's pagan and Christian worshipers in order to bring stability and ensure that his empire lasted. The easiest way to bring harmony would be to blend sun worship and Christianity. History shows that the Church of Rome did not object. Indeed, it had been engaging in the practice for nearly two centuries. The bishops at Rome also claimed Peter as the head of the church instead of Christ, developing a non-biblical doctrine of apostolic succession. They claimed that the authority conferred on Peter was transferred to themselves. The Saint Peter that was created was actually a combination of pagan idolatry and Christian veneration. Even today, the statue in St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome includes a solar disk above his head. Tradition has it that this was actually a statue of Jupiter taken from a pagan temple and simply renamed St. Peter. Sun worship, which appears in nearly every pagan religion in the world, soon appeared in Christian art, imagery, and theology. The halo often seen on Christ and Mary is actually a symbol of sun worship. A lot of people, I know, any picture that you may look up, that you see this biblical Jesus on, you're going to see him with a picture of a halo or a sun behind his head. This is because this biblical character was a representation of the sun, you know, with sun worship, you know, which I just read about. Where they get this word halo from is the word Heliopolis, which is a city in Egypt, which is city of the sun. And so they got this word helio from this word here. That's also where they get their idea of hell from, because, you know, they do not like the sun. There are beings on the planet that do not like the sun. So Heliopolis would be hell to them. Also have another, just a little article that I saw here, talking about the similarities between this, between different cultures around the world. They got a lot of different cultures around the world have a being that they worship or that they talk about around this time, December 25th. Of course, there's Horus. You know, this is where they get the whole concept of Jesus from, because this Horus, you know, they had the face of the sun, you know, and had the symbol of the sun on them. Also in Greece, in 1200 BC, before 1200 BC, they had Attis, which was born of a virgin, born on December 25th. It was crucified, dead for 3 days, and resurrected. In Persia, they have Mithra, which was born of a virgin, born on December 25th, had 12 disciples. It performed miracles, was dead for 3 days, and resurrected. In India, around 900 BC, they had Krishna, born of a virgin. It was from a star in the east, performed miracles, was resurrected. In Greece of 500 BC, they had Dionysus, born of a virgin, born December 25th, performed miracles, was king of kings, Alpha and Omega, was resurrected. So all these different cultures had their own version of this biblical Jesus, just like they took all this information and stole it from our real ancestors. So when they say that this Jesus walked on water, or this sun walked on water, what they mean by that is when you're standing on the shore and you're watching the sun, well, when you're standing on the shore and the earth is doing its rotation and the sun appears to rise, it appears to come out of the water. And when you're looking at it, the sun is actually walking across the water when you're standing on the shore, and you're just awaiting the presence of the sun, you know, the feeling of the sun while you're standing on the shore. That was the whole idea behind, you know, for waiting for the sun, or the sun dying on a cross, and all of the things that they stole and gave back to us in these fairy tale type of ways. I want to go on to the next section. They're talking about here in Mark chapter 7, verse 31 through 37. It says, and again, departing from the coast of Tyre and Sidon, he came unto the Sea of Galilee, the midst of the coast of Decapolis. And they bring unto him one that was deaf, and he had an impediment in his speech, and they beseech him to put his hand upon him. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers into his ears, and he spit and touched his tongue. And looking up to heaven, he sighed and saith unto him, Ephphatha, that is, be open. And straightway his ears were open, and the string of his tongue was loose, and he spake plain. And he charged them that they should tell no man, but the more he charged them, so much the more a great deal they published it. So basically this biblical Jesus, they cured the deaf and the mute. And right here I want to tell people of a few different instances where, well, I mean, there's a lot of them out here, but I just want to read about a few different instances where there's been people that's been cured of deafness. All right, this right here article is coming from CNN.com. In many ways, Hayden Moran is an average 5-year-old boy running around his front yard, climbing trees and playing his brother. The only difference you might notice is the small device on the side of his head. Caden was born, and before we left the hospital, we did the newborn hearing screening, and he had failed, So we came back a week later. He did the test again, failed again, said his mother, Daniel Morgan. Kaden was born profoundly deaf with no cochlea, an inner part of the ear that converts sound to nerve impulses and sends them to the brain. So we have a story here. It was talking about a boy that had a bionic ear that had caused him to be able to hear again. Also have another story here. It's talking about a woman that was in her 30s. She was actually 39, and she was able to get her hearing back. So here's a few instances here where we got this Bible Jesus character was able to cure some people of deafness. But if we do a little bit of research today, we can find out that you can be cured of deafness today also. You know, there's a few different ways that they can do it, a few different things. They got something called a bionic ear. That was what they used to heal the child that was about 5 years old. All right, also we have in Luke chapter 5, verse 1. And it came to pass that as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret and saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were going out of them and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught people of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep, and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answered him, saying unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night, and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the ship, and the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they that came and filled both ships, so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he was astonished that all that were with him at the draught of fishes which they had just taken. So this biblical Jesus had caused for them to catch a mass multitude of fish at one time, and they was out there trying to catch fish for the longest, but yet couldn't. This biblical Jesus was able to help them out in doing that. But we have this going on all the time. I just call it industrialized fishing. I mean, you can go out there and look at any shore. They got even reality shows about it, of how they catch masses of fish. I mean, thousands and thousands of fish with just one catch. So this biblical Jesus was able to do the same thing that men and women are able to do today by providing masses amount of fish at one time in one haul. All right, this next section I want to talk about here is when they say that this Jesus, the Bible Jesus, had rid the world of sin. But yet, if we go to John chapter 16, verses 7 through 8, it says, Nevertheless, I tell you the truth, it is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will descend him unto you. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. Let me repeat that. It says, and when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin. This is in the red letters right here. So for anybody, for all the pastors out there that's telling you that Jesus came and died for your sins, all you have to do is just go to John 16, verses 7 and 8. And this biblical Jesus is talking about a comforter, that he has to go away. He's not talking about himself. He's not, you know, there's not no kind of parallel talking or nothing like that. He's talking about it. He has to go away. And when he goes away, he will send the Comforter, and the Comforter will reprove the world of sin. To further talk about this, I want to go to the 350 questions to ask a Christian that was written by a master teacher. Got any wrote up? The question was asked to Christians, if according to Christianity, Jesus was the comforter, then why didn't he reprove the world of sin when he came? The answer, they can't answer this question. According to John chapter 16, verse 8, the comforter will reprove the world of sin when he comes. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. The word used in Greek for reprove is elekō, meaning to confute, admonish, convict, tell a fault, rebuke. According to the Illustrated Heritage Dictionary and Information Book on page 1104, the word reprove is defined as to rebuke for a fault or misdeed, to scold. However, according to Christianity, Jesus came to take away the world's sin as found in John chapter 1, verse 29, where it says, and I quote, the next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him and saith, behold, the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. Think about it. If Jesus came to die on the cross for the world's sin, then why is there still sin in the world? And according to John chapter 16, verse 8, the comforter is to reprove the world of judgment. Because as it says in John chapter 16, verse 11, and I quote, of judgment because the prince of this world is judged. However, Jesus said he came to save the world, not to judge it, in John chapter 12, verse 47. This is John chapter 12, verse 47. And if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. All right? So, what does another comforter mean? Because when he said the comforter, he said another comforter. Because people try to say that this Jesus is the comforter. So what does another comforter mean? To further explain that, I'm going to go to page 60 of 360 Questions to Ask a Christian. The question that was formed here was, ask the Christians, when Jesus said in John 14:16, and I quote, I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever. What was another that Jesus was saying his Father was saying? The answer, they don't know the answer to this. However, no one can deny the fact that another is in reference to something of the same kind. This kind would have to be another teacher, as Jesus was. According to the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, the word another is defined as one, an additional, one more, two, distinctively different, some other, three, different but of the same character, like an additional one, a different one, or one of the same kind. In Assyrian Arabic, the word for another used in John chapter 14:16 is akir, from the root word akara, meaning another, the other, a thing or person other than former or first, as in the phrase rajulu akuru, meaning another man. The connotation or implication suggestion here is not merely another, but another of the same kind. So it's safe to say that the word another, which is used in this quote, is in reference to someone of the same kind. And for those of you who say Jesus is God or the Father, here he says that he will pray or ask the Father, not himself. All right, so what is the Comforter? This is another question that was asked in the same book. The question was asked the Christians, what is the Comforter? Now, the answer, they will say, the Holy Ghost is the Comforter. However, a comforter is defined as one who consoles or comforts. The word comforter, the noun, is derived from the verb to comfort, which means to strengthen greatly, to give strength and hope to, cheer, to ease the grief or trouble of, console. In Aramaic or Hebrew, the word for comforter is necham. Other forms of the word are number 5163, necham, pronounced nakam, from 5162, consolation. Nakam also comes from number 5165 as pronounced Nakamal. Also number 5166 pronounced as Nikimial. In the Greek language, the word used for comforter is Paracletos. That's number 3870. Paracleto. It means to call near, to invite or invoke, to beseech, to call for. Also number 3874. Parakaleus, meaning importation, oration, comfort, consolation, exhortation, entreaty, praise. All these definitions are taken from Strong's exhaustive Hebrew and Greek concordance by James Strong. The short Syriac or Arabic word used for comforter is mu'iz, from the root word azal and azah, which means to take patience, console oneself, to comfort, praise, or gratitude. Now, if you heard someone say, when he comes, he will lead you into all truth, what do you think the implication of he would represent here? Would you say it was referring to a person, place, or thing? Of course, you would have to say it is referring to a person. In English grammar, the third person, he, is almost always in reference to a person, a male. So then it's also safe to say that the quote in the Gospel of John, chapter 16:13, is in reference to a person, not a ghost. Now you know that the word another means one of the same kind, and the pronoun he is in reference to a person. All right, so, and that also continues on to say, as the Christians, can the word comforter be found anywhere else in the scriptures? They can't answer this question. However, the fact is there are numerous places throughout the scriptures where the word comfort or comforter can be found. I selected a few quotes to give you a better understanding of the words comforter and comfort. Quote number one, Genesis chapter 5, verse 29, Noah was a comforter. Quote number two, Isaiah chapter 51, verse 12, is talking about Isaiah was a comforter. And quote number three, Isaiah chapter 66, verse 13. Says Isaiah's mother comforted, which simply means she was a comforter, in the sense she consoled her son also. So as the Christians, are these comforters mentioned in the previous questions human beings or not? They will have to say that they are humans. And that is right. They were all human beings. In every instance that you find the word comforter mentioned in the scriptures, it has been in reference to a person, again, not a ghost or a spirit. In 2 Samuel chapter 10, verse 3, it speaks of a comforter as a person. In 1 Chronicles chapter 19, verse 3, it speaks of a comforter as a person. Also in Job chapter 16, verse 2. In Psalms chapter 69, verse 20. In John chapter 14, verse 16. In John chapter 15, verse 26. Also in John chapter 16, verse 7. All these quotes are in reference to people. During the 2nd century A.D., a man by the name of Montanus claimed to be the voice of the Holy Spirit. He claimed that this was a fulfillment of the New Testament promise of Pentecost, which is the enlightenment of the faithful of the Holy Spirit. The essential principle of Montanism was Paraclete, the Spirit of Truth, whom Jesus promised in the book of John, chapter 14, verse 16, and 16, verse 7. Was manifesting himself to the world through Montanus and through the prophets associated with them. Also, Tertullian, an early version Christian author and polemicist in history, was a convert to Montanism. So he gave himself fully to this movement and eventually became the spokesman, which means he too believed that the Comforter was a person. So this right here was only just to show that this Jesus of the Bible did not come to rid the world of sin, but he was to send this comforter. That's another being just like him. It was not just this Jesus was not the only one that came to spread love and to send a message of love and to show, you know, it was a messenger. And there were many messengers. There were many of our ancestors that came and laid the path for us and you know, did a lot more than this Bible Jesus did for. This last point that I want to make out here is just something that, just a little something that we can just take away from it. It's just talking about Jesus ate meat. You know, a lot of us still eat meat, even though Genesis chapter 1, verse 29 says, is Genesis chapter 1, verse 29. It says, and God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, and the rich is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for me. So if this Jesus is supposed to be God, if they're supposed to be the same person, if they're supposed to be three goes into one evenly and all this other kind of stuff, or if this is supposed to be the Son of God and all these other kind of things, why is he not listening to the, you know, the statement made in Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, where it's talking about the fruit and the vegetables of this planet shall be here for us for meat? Because when it goes down to Luke chapter 24, verse 39, says, behold, my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones, as ye see me have. And when he had thus spoken, he shewed them his hands and his feet. And while they yet not believed not for joy and wonder, he said unto them, have ye here any meat? So this biblical Jesus, when he, you know, showed himself to everybody back, he was kind of hungry. He asked for meat. If you go look up his word meat, you go back to the Greek, Greek number 1034, brosenos, which means eatable or meat. So right here we're talking about actual meat. So this biblical Jesus here is making the same mistakes that we humans still making today. When I read something coming from a master teacher, this is coming out of the mouth, brother. Most people eat far more than necessary, merely out of habit or for a sense of gratification. An immoderate diet is the cause of the great majority of diseases that are encountered in modern society. The mind is always looking for an excuse to avoid discipline. You must always listen to the inner voice of the self. There are two sides to you, 180 degrees of agreeable and 180 degrees of disagreeable. 1% is all that is needed to shift your emotion to the one side, starting the path of disagreeable action, or very agreeable. You are in control. Listen to the voice of agreeable things, rather than the complaints of the disagreeable mind. What goes into the human body correlates directly to the efficiency with the brain's function. Studies have shown that certain day of food color creates hyperactivity in children, and that refined sugar can cause emotional instability. And this is what most start their children on. These are just two examples of the substances that are heedlessly consumed without understanding the effect on the body and the mind, each of which have two parts. The body is one, voluntary, two, involuntary, that which you control and that which takes control of itself. The mind is one, good, and two, evil, which also try to take control. Many intakes are bad, although not categorized as harmful foods. These substances should be strictly avoided: marijuana, cigarettes, alcohol, drugs. There is a growing awareness that our health is directly affected by what we eat. Any disease can be cured by either a change in diet or a short period of fasting and with no medication at all. This is not only true of physical disorders, but many mental difficulties as well. It is particularly important that pregnant mothers be aware of this, for too often they do not realize the effect of their diet on developing fetus. Contrary to popular concept, it is not vegetarians who do not get enough protein, but rather heavy meat eaters who intake an excess of protein. Animal protein contains a high concentration of uric acid, which is a nitrogen compound similar to ammonia. It is not water-soluble and cannot be broken down by the liver. Thus, though a certain amount is eliminated, the great portion of uric acid is deposited into the joints. The results of this is referred to as arthritis. Hardening of the arteries and heart disease are two of the most common maladies in the Western world. where the greatest amount of meat is consumed. The culprit, my child, is cholesterol that also cannot be eliminated from the body and thus forms steady deposits along the walls of the heart and arteries, gradually thickening until they are clogged and inflexible. The major source of cholesterol comes from the hundreds of pounds of animal tissue and its fats that each person consumes each year. Heart disease, hardening of the arteries, and arthritis are common infirmities. However, the one that strikes the most fear in the hearts of Westerners is cancer. Many substances have been found to create cancer in animals. However, results always seem to indicate that the amount consumed by the average person is insufficient to create cancer. What is not revealed is that the accumulation of these poisons over a period of years does cause cancer. These substances are innumerable chemicals that are injected into animals. These increase the weight to yield more dollars per animal. Nitrates, food coloring, artificial hormones, and even arsenic is among the chemicals contained in animal flesh by the time it goes on the supermarket shelf. These, plus the many other additives consumed by members of an industrialized society, collect in the body and are stored in the tissues. Cancer occurs when the cell reacts to those excessive toxins in a sense, mutating into cells which reproduce uncontrollably. So much for the horrors of the meat industry. There are several other interesting physical and spiritual reasons for not eating meat. One is it takes four times as much grain to feed animals than for a human to consume it directly. This raises a moral question in regards to sharing our resources with poorer people. Plants are the original source of energy for all living things. They store the energy of the sun through photosynthesis. A person who does not eat a lot of meat not only takes nourishment from their original source, but their diet is more economical with regards to cost and the best utilization. Seafood is very good for you, but that too can be taken in excess. Another more interesting fact is that a human being's digestive system is not one of a carnivore. His or her teeth are designed through mutation for biting and mashing original vegetables. But after so much mixing, now many Negroes or Afro-Americans, blacks, have canine teeth for tearing flesh. The lack of those teeth was the reason why a human being ages, tenderizes, and cooks his or her meat to make it more edible. Diet also alters the person's very appearance from human to animal, as well as his or her nature. Meat eaters are much more violent. The human liver is proportionally smaller than that of a meat-eating animal, and it is not built to handle the filtering of animal poisons. So this right here basically is the, you know, many, many, many reasons for us not eating meat. So, you know, we're doing the same thing that this biblical Jesus did, you know, in plain English. So, you know, we got a lot of correcting to do ourselves. Who is Sister Nantiki Carter? Any hands up?
Mana? Who am I? At this time, we have 17 minutes left in the show. The hand that we have up is 9305. Again, call it 9305. Your hand is up. I'm going to go ahead and patch you in. Again, call it 9305.
Oh, who are, I thought I put my hand down. I didn't raise my hand. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right, sister. Well, Mona, if you have any hands or if you have any questions, please press 1 on your phone. Again, please press 1 on your phone if you have any questions or a brief statement.
All right. Who was this? Did you say we had 17 minutes, or did you want me to give my final thoughts? Who was the third non-Tiki Core?
Tua.
Did you say we had 17 minutes, or do you want me to go and get my final thoughts?
We have 15 minutes left over. If you would like to finish what you were going to read about, you can go ahead and then we can end the show. If I see any hands up, I'll let you know. Again, if you have any hands, please press 1.
Well, I'm going to continue reading the rest of the mind here. It's talking about the human liver is proportionally smaller than that of a meat-eating animal and is not built to handle the filtering of animal poisons. Also, the alimentary canal, which is short in carnivorous animals, to speed poisons through the body quickly. It is quite long in a human being, as it is in any vegetarian animal. Note the untruth that you need meat or that you will lose weight if you don't eat meat. Herbivores are much more larger than carnivorous animals. Mind your mind for the jewels of your soul. Hopefully everybody took something away from this class of shadow, showing the same similarities that this biblical Jesus do. He said that the works that he did, that we do better, and this just goes to show that man and woman are doing the same exact things that this biblical Jesus did. So this was a messenger. This was a character that they based off of our ancestors. So the things that our ancestors did, we do greater because we combine our things with the things of our ancestors through the blood, their experiences, their talents, their experiences, the things that they went through, we learn through them. So they, in turn, make us better. So it is actually our ancestors that went through everything that they went through so that we can continue on to grow and be the way that we are. So we need to acknowledge that and give all the praises to this picture on the wall and start to look within. I would like to thank everybody for listening and calling in with the questions. Huamana, Pita Numatun, Kamun Fing.